At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Cross to the far post, Giroud! And Olivier Giroud moves on to 51 French goals, drawing level with the great Thierry Henry.
Hello and welcome to Serie A Spotlight Season 2, Episode 15. We're your hosts Jake
and Matt.
And this is our World Cup special, where we'll also be talking about the most important thing in life, the Serie A.
Bravo. Okay.
It is currently the 1st of December. We would have liked to record this episode after the round of 16 participants had been settled, but I am off to Africa and that will not be possible.
Exactly. Unfortunately, he's off to Africa.
Yes, it's going to be an absolute blast. You have 2 weeks without me. In those 2 weeks, I'm hoping that Matt takes care of the content and will be dishing out podcast episodes, at least two episodes. Right, bro?
Look, you guys are going to need to wake me up. Okay, because Jake's out for 2 weeks and I'm going to want to sleep for 2 weeks. But I'm going to have to get my shit together and dish out some content.
DM, say a spotlight, tweet us out, whatever. Hashtag Matt, please. Okay? Just do that. Matt, please. Okay, and that will hopefully wake him up. It will make him know that the people are expecting something out of him.
No, I hope the listeners know that I love doing this more than anything else and that it won't be a problem to get some content from me.
Yeah.
Just finding the right people to join me, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are a few people listening right now who would love to be on. Maybe Cesco.
Cesco's in Rome, though.
Ah, I see. Oh, okay.
He is. Maybe he's coming down in December.
You work maybe with a couple of Serie A heads, though.
No, they're all Prem heads, man.
Okay.
They're all Prem heads.
Well, you'll find someone.
Speaking,
while we're on the topic of holidays, bro, you went to Florence recently.
I did.
I couldn't help but notice through Key's stories that you had ramen a few days into your Florence experience. What the fuck's going on, bro? Are you uncultured? Who the fuck goes to Florence and eats ramen?
You know that when I go to Italy, I have cornetto and cappuccino for breakfast. I then have pasta, pizza, espresso, red wine. That's the way I do it. Fact of the matter...
When you're not eating ramen.
Fact of the matter is, in Florence, one of the most beautiful places I have been to, by the way, there are a lot of expats, a lot of tourists, and a lot of the restaurants in the main areas are tourist traps. So Key's fucking carbonara had truffle in it, for example.
Oh, che schifo.
The crust on my pizza was a little bit thick, like, and maybe the mozzarella wasn't as runny as it should be. So we felt a bit robbed. We were looking up authentic restaurants, and every time we went, it was still a fucking tourist trap. I'm sure we could have been, like, on the left side of the river. It would have been better, for example. So we took matters into our own hands and we're like, look, I mean, this won't be authentic anyway, but at least we'd have had some ramen while we're here. So we got some ramen. It was really nice. And yes, we made quite a funny video out of it.
Nice. That's good to hear, bro. I particularly love the story you told me before of your wine tasting experience. Perhaps we should get through that before we get to the football.
Yes. So it wasn't exactly a wine tour that we went on. But we did stop in Chianti. So what me and Key do when we go on holiday is, rather than renting a car, since we'd only use it for one day, is we'd get this bus that takes us around some really cool spots, like places we'd go with the car. And this one took us to San Gimignano, a beautiful little fortified city. It took us to Siena and it took us to Chianti. Chianti is my favorite wine. So obviously I was enjoying myself. This guy was pouring us wine and serving us like salami and shit. And we're just yelling out ratings. We're getting drunk with all the people with us. Now, a lot of them were American. There's a large percentage of the population of Florence being American because there are a lot of expats kind of want to retire. There are a lot of American people want to retire in a romantic city such as Florence.
Just as there is a large percentage of people who are from America and listen to say a spotlight, right? So tread carefully.
I have absolutely no problem with Americans.
I love the USA. Come on, USA!
Yeah, loud drinkers. Loud they drinkers. Get very loud, but yeah. So do the Mediterranean, so no problems there. So yeah, we're enjoying ourselves with a lot of Americans. And there are also 10 people that were of Asian descent over there. And I do this thing when I see people from different places of the earth, I try to guess where they're from, where they live, what they do, who they are. And obviously, I try to guess their nationality. And I was looking at the Asian people and I was saying...
Is this a game you play to yourself or...
Just with myself. I say, okay, that guy there, he's Japanese. That woman is South Korean, and that kid is Chinese. Okay, I think I've got this. We're obviously drinking, and we all start introducing ourselves. And every single one of these Asian people were from Seattle, Washington. Seattle, Washington, New York, Los Angeles. There was the guy from Los Angeles didn't speak a word of English. I'm from Los Angeles. Yeah. Like, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, immigrants, and then they raise their kids to be basically, they sound American, they are American, you know? It's a very
You spend enough time in a place and you identify with that place then, yeah.
So, yes, we're going to go through the Serie A players participating in the World Cup and how they have performed thus far. If you notice from our intro, of course, we highlighted the great Olivier Giroud's second goal against Australia. That was his 51st goal for France. He has equaled Thierry Henry's record and has become the joint top scorer for the French national team with 51 goals. What do you think, bro?
So everyone here knows how much we love Giroud. You know, he's my fucking lock screen for crying out loud. It's funny, though, that when I speak to French people, they don't really, at least the ones I spoke to, don't really value Giroud.
The ones I speak to don't rate him either. They call him a go-kart.
Oh, man, I've heard that before. Yeah. Them telling me, no, Benzema, no, Griezmann, no, Mbappe. Yeah. Look, fact of the matter is this guy blossomed late. Yes. For club and country. He started playing for France in 2011.
Exactly.
And he managed to get 51 goals. Tied with Thierry Henry. Yes. Claimed a god for the French football fans, which he is. But ladies and gentlemen, Olivier Giroud goes down with history alongside this man. They both won the World Cup.
Yeah.
For France.
Exactly. 116 games is what it took Olivier Giroud to score 51 goals. That's a very good return.
And it's crazy when you consider that he didn't score a single goal in the 2018 World Cup.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he could have, he'd be ahead of him had he scored at least one.
Exactly.
But yeah, that's the utility striker. He is the selfless legend, Olivier Giroud.
Yes, sir. So now, we've had some beautiful moments in this World Cup so far. Yes, you know, the Saudi Arabias, the Senegals, the Cameroons, the Japans, so on and so forth. Alongside that, brother, we've had some very funny moments.
Some hilarious moments.
So many to choose from, but you are kind enough to make a compilation of your favorites.
Yes, sir.
So here that goes.
I'm not going to say that I'm looking better than him, which is true, but...
Today I feel gay.
Excuse me, what is missing? What is missing?
Guys, sorry, you're live on Sky News. Your reaction to the win?
We lost.
Sorry, reaction to the loss. Apologies. Reaction to the loss.
Shit.
Apologies for the language.
Do you know Hansi Flick?
Sorry?
Do you know Hansi Flick?
Hansi Flick. Was ist das?
Bundestrainer, German coach.
Aha.
Bravo. Bravo. Bravo.
La Corea del Sud con Kim, Jung-Wan, Na So Lin e Hwang.
They're too good, bro. Let's just run you through them quickly in case you did not recognize what those were. The first one is the infamous Piers Morgan interview with Cristiano Ronaldo, where he publicly states that he's not going to say that he's better looking than Wayne Rooney, but then he does. Quite I mean, sure, fair enough. Yeah, I agree. You know, obviously.
Much better looking. Yeah.
More humble, probably not. The next one was Infantino saying that he feels a little bit gay today. He felt many things, bro, to be honest.
He felt Arab.
He felt African.
He felt African.
Yeah, he felt many things. And he also compared the plight of being an immigrant worker in conditions that could actually kill you to being born with freckles. So, yes, Infantino is clearly a man who has been through many hardships. You can tell when you see him on your television screen sitting on a custom-made sofa watching all the fucking World Cup games, you know.
Madonna. That was so funny, man. He looked like an evil Bond villain.
He's
like,
an evil Bond villain, bro. And he always has a different sofa for every match. It's hilarious. The next one of my favorites. Where is Messi? Where is Messi?
That has to be, honestly, one of my favorite moments in football history. It's for Saudi Arabia to beat Argentina, who are hailed to be one of the favorites to win the World Cup. Saudi Arabia, one of the worst teams, quite frankly.
One player will go down in memory forever. He'll go down in history. Al Dawsari. What a player. What a fucking finish on him. It's a real shame Saudi Arabia couldn't get it done. And we're very disappointing against Mexico. They played well in their second game, but couldn't quite replicate that performance against Mexico. Maybe the pressure was too much.
The Mexicans were hungry as well, brother. They had to get goals.
They were starving. Yeah. They had all their people, you know, the circuit, the pride that Mexicans have, and the patriotism.
Of course. And obviously Poland infamously going through because they had two lesser yellow cards than Mexico. And, so heartbreaking.
And they have one of the best goalkeepers out there at the moment, I believe. Yes.
Yeah.
The next clip was a couple of Wales fans being Wales fans. The interviewer asks them, what do you think about the win? And one of them says, we lost. And then he says, how do you think it went? And then the guy says, shit. And then the guy says, apologize for the language. It's fucking hilarious.
I mean, that's what you get. You interview someone whose team just lost.
You don't know who you're interviewing.
They would have had a few drinks, but they wouldn't have had a few. They probably would have had some before.
Yeah, maybe. Do you know Hansi Flick? It was another fun one. A question asked to Takuma Asano. Hansi Flick, of course, is the German manager. Takuma Asano is the Japanese player who scored the winning goal against Germany. He did not know what that word was. That word was indeed the name of the German manager.
So disrespectful. Hey, the man should know who Hansi Flick is.
Yeah, I mean, he spent so long preparing. You know? Maybe he didn't understand the pronunciation, but whatever. The next one was Nagatomo saying bravo, something he learned during his Inter games. Anything Nagatomo does will end up on this podcast.
Exactly. I can't believe he still plays, man, Nagatomo.
Yeah, hey, I couldn't. When I saw him, I was like, whoa. And he has red hair now as well. Mm-hmm. Trying to understand Infantino's struggle. The final clip we had over there was the Italian commentator announcing South Korea's lineup. They had their goalkeeper was called Kim. And their entire back four consisted of Kim. That was a fun one.
Very fun. I saw people saying that the commentator is going to have such a hard time. No, he's not. Yeah. Someone at the back gets it. That's Kim.
There we go.
Easy. Plays it laterally. Plays the ball to Kim.
Someone scores off a corner. You're not sure who it is. It's Kim! You have a good chance of getting it right.
Now, does this Kim start for league leaders Napoli? Yeah. Or does he play in the Chinese Super League? Yeah, doesn't matter. He's Kim.
Exactly, yes. Before, obviously, we get into the World Cup stuff, this is primarily a Serie A podcast, and there's something that needs to be discussed urgently, okay? Yeah. There's some drama involving Juventus. What's going on, brother?
So, basically, I'm sure you guys heard, but Agnelli, Vice President Pavel Nedved, and CEO Maurizio Arrivabene are among 15 members of Juve who could face a trial for alleged false accounting and irregularities in player transfers, with arrest warrants rumored to be prepared. Former director of sport Paratici, who left the club to take over Tottenham in the Premier League last year, is also part of this list because of his involvement from 2018. So this timeline starts around the start of the pandemic, basically. Juve said that 23 players agreed to reduce their salary for 4 months to help the club through the financial crisis that pretty much everyone was going through. Juve a bit more than most because they had just signed Cristiano Ronaldo for 116 million and paid him 31 million annually. So that left the club absolutely financially screwed. Prosecutors claim that all the players only gave up 1 month of their salary, as opposed to the 4 that Juve said they did. Because of that, there's basically a misbalance in their books. This could lead Juve to face a serious penalty, which could include point deduction, which they had already faced 16 years ago during the Calciopoli scandal.
I thought they were just relegated.
It was like such a significant point deduction that it got them relegated, I believe. Shit. I remember...
It's like a 70-point deduction. What?
Yeah, I remember Milan had gotten like minus 15 points and Inter had won the league because the two teams above them, one of them got relegated and the other one got a 15-point deduction.
Yeah, that was for fixing matches indirectly through yellow cards accumulated in matches other than Juve's.
Yeah, this is, on the other hand, a classic case of a misbalance in books. You're invoicing something, you're reporting something else, you're hiding another thing. And in this case, they were hiding that the money that they were sending to their players. So they didn't meet the financial regularities and they were pretending to meet the financial regularities. So that is a big case. The entire board decided to resign over that. The likes of fucking Agnelli and Nedved resigned for Juve. Just as soon as things started looking good for Juve this season.
Yeah, man. Terrible timing for them. They had just picked up momentum. They hadn't conceded a goal in ages. They were on a winning streak, you know, their players were just coming back from injury and now they have to deal with this drama. Bro, how is this going to develop?
It's not looking good, man. And I know that we've seen in certain times where we thought penalties should have been harsher than they were for certain things, even that Juve had done. But this time, I think it's worse.
Yeah,
this is actually very, very serious.
This is a legal blunder.
Exactly. Arrest warrants are rumored to be prepared. They are prepared.
Now, the thing is, Juve had been investigated a couple of years ago, maybe 2 years ago, due to some inflated prices. That was the accusation. This had to do with the Audero deal to Sampdoria, the Storaro deal to Genoa, the Arthur and Pjanic swap involving 70 million.
Like Madonna.
Arthur and Pjanic, so not even 70 million combined, brother, let alone fucking individually. But anyway, the problem is those accusations were dropped formally because the FA couldn't actually prove the value of a player.
Exactly.
Because it's subjective and it depends on the market.
Exactly. But yeah, that's where Juve find themselves now. It's a bit more serious than that. It is actually, you know, screwing with finances. Yeah. And that's obviously something we all know. Any football league is very strict with. There are regulations you need to keep in line with. And yeah, Juve are suffering because of that. And I'm excited to see what's going to come of it.
Hey, point deduction, relegation, let's see. Perhaps nothing. Perhaps the individuals get charged. This is interesting as well. UEFA have opened a formal investigation into Juve over the potential financial fair play breaches and the club licensing breaches as well. La Liga have pushed for this to happen. Even though they have Barcelona, who in my opinion is even more blatant than Juve.
Agreed.
So yeah, we'll see about Juve and we'll see how they react coming into the season after this.
Yeah, good luck to you, Juve.
Good luck to you. Del Piero is rumored as well to be apparently closer than ever to taking on a role at Juventus. He put a whole post, an Instagram post, saying that in a time like this, it's the most important time to support Juventus when they're demonstrating blatant corruption. that's when you should applaud for Juventus the hardest, all right? Well done, bravo, Del Piero.
Well done, Del Piero. Legend. He had stayed with Juve when they were down in Serie B.
Proper gentleman, no, Del Piero.
Yes.
And it's true, though. The fans do need to come together. These times can be divisive. They can be hard. But remember, this isn't the problem of the club. This is the problem of the individuals who are running the club at the end of the day.
Exactly. I'd be interested to see what happens with Agnelli and Ferrari. Ferrari did that something too. As well. I know you don't give a shit, but Agnelli owns Ferrari.
And what happened with them? Well?
Nothing so far.
Nothing.
But Ferrari
I thought someone stepped down.
From Ferrari, that was Mattia Binotto.
Okay.
He's the CEO. He looks after the entire operation, basically. He used to be a mechanic for Michael Schumacher, and he got promoted to that role.
Cool. I'm bored.
That's such a good story. Michael Schumacher's mechanic. He won 7 world titles.
Yeah, I'm bored. Let's get to the World Cup, brother.
Yes. This is what this episode is for, guys.
Yes, sir. Shall we run through quickly the players who are currently featuring at the World Cup who play in Serie A and Serie B?
Yeah, I won't say quickly because it's the entire premise of this episode. But yeah, we can run through them.
Let's do it, bro. Sorry. So first of all, there are three teams in Serie A who do not have a single player featuring in this World Cup. Who are these three teams, brother?
Okay. So it could either be two things. It could either be teams that have mostly Italian players in their team, or the newly promoted teams. I would say Monza are a mix of both.
Yeah, Monza are one of them. Monza don't have a single player featuring in the World Cup, which means, by the way, they're training as a unit right now, and you know, full team doing full drills. They might be good after the break. Mm.
Now, I want to say, obviously, Cremonese and Lecce are easy choices, but I also feel that Empoli don't have many. So, one of them's gotta go.
Who are you?
I don't know which one. Cremonese have... Obviously, the centre-back, what's it? Umtiti isn't at the World Cup.
No, he
wasn't
called Umtiti's with Lecce.
Oh, sorry, I meant Lecce. Yeah. I would have to say the other team is Lecce.
Yes, so there's Monza, there's Lecce.
And Empoli, I said Empoli already.
Yes, there we go. Those are the three teams that do not have any more
features. Cremonese, what, a Fenerbahce?
They have a Fenerbahce, indeed, and they've got Vasquez playing for Mexico.
Vasquez, okay.
Now, there are three teams from the Serie B who have players featuring in the Serie A. Who are they?
Oh, from Serie B? Yes. I couldn't tell you. I was just listening to our podcast, to our last episode in the car, and I heard Matthias bring one up, an Australian gentleman.
Yes, sir.
I forgot his name. I know one of them is Glick.
Yes.
One of them is Glick.
Glick plays for Benevento, of course. So it's Benevento, Bari, and Brescia. Bari have Cedira of Morocco, while Brescia have Karacic of Austria.
Ah, Karacic. Yeah. I knew he had an itch in his name.
Yes, sir. So let's go. So Atalanta have 4 players featuring for them in the World Cup. I hope I do not have to count them out loud manually every time. So yes, Atalanta have Pasalic, Meile, Darun, and Coop Miners at the World Cup. Pasalic, of course, representing Croatia, Meile representing Denmark, Darun and Coop Miners representing the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. Bologna have got Abisher representing Switzerland and Skorupski representing Poland, even though he does not start. Cremonese, of course, as we discussed, have Vasquez, who plays with Mexico, and Afenajan, who plays with Ghana. Fiorentina have Zurkowski featuring for Poland, Milinkovic and Jovic for Serbia, Amrabat for Morocco, and of course Nico Gonzalez originally had been called up by Argentina, but was withdrawn by the end of it, did not end up going due to injury, but it had been addressed by Italiano that he was mentally unavailable for Fiorentina as well.
Yeah.
Inter have Brozovic, had Onana, have Lukaku at the World Cup, of course, limited leader representing, actually Brozovic, of course, is representing Croatia, Onana is representing Cameroon, Lukaku is representing Belgium, De Vrij and Dumfries with the Netherlands, Lautaro Martinez and Correa representing Argentina. Juventus have Danilo and Alexandro, as well as Bremer representing Brazil, McKennie for the USA, Rabiot for France, Szczesny and Milik for Poland, Kostic and Vlahovic for Serbia, Paredes and Di Maria for Argentina. Juventus are actually the team that have the most players featuring at the World Cup in this era.
Mr. Worldwide, huh?
Yes, sir. Let's see how many of these guys take under the table deals. Lazio, Lazio have Milinkovic-Savic featuring for Serbia and Vecino, featuring for Uruguay. Milan have Simon Kjær with Denmark, Dest at the USA, Theo Hernandez and Giroud for France, De Ketelaere for Belgium, Leao for Portugal, and Balotelli for Senegal. Napoli have got Anguissa representing Cameroon, Zielinski with Poland, Oliveira Uruguay, Kim Jae-min with South Korea, and Chucky Lozano representing Mexico. Roma have Zalewski representing Poland, Vinha representing Uruguay, Rui Patricio for Portugal, Dybala for Argentina, by Salernitana have Piontek representing Poland, Dia representing Senegal, and Bron representing Tunisia. Sampdoria have Berezinski with Poland, Juricic with Serbia, and Sabiri with Morocco. Sassuolo only have Erlich at the World Cup. He's representing Croatia. Spezia have Ampadu with Wales, Kiwior with Poland. Torino have quite a few as well. They've got Vlasic with Croatia, Ricardo Rodriguez with Switzerland, Lukic, Radonjic, and Vanja Milinkovic-Savic with Serbia. Udinese have Ebosa with Cameroon, and Verona have Hrustic with Australia. Hongla with Cameroon, and Lazovic and Ilic with Serbia. Now, of course, I need to address also the Serie B players. We've already discussed the Benevento have Glick with Poland, Bari have Chedira with Morocco, and Brescia have Karadžić with Australia. Now, brother, let's start off by discussing the most successful outings from these guys, from this extensive group and list of players. Let's start off with France, who have Theo Hernandez, Rabiot, and Olivier Giroud. They all played brilliantly, to be honest. They probably all started because other people were out injured.
All of them.
Yeah, all of them, literally. There's Pogba, I guess, would have started instead of Rabiot, probably. Benzema instead of Giroud. And, of course, Theo Hernandez's brother instead of him. He got injured. That's why he came in.
Apparently. But as a left back, Theo was much better.
It's daft, in my opinion. How can you not start Theo Hernandez? You know, Giroud, okay, I get it. You start Benzema. Fine, fair enough. Even Rabiot at the moment is hard to bench. I think he would have started anyway, maybe.
Theo has, what, 2 assists, man?
Yeah, he's been super. He really changed the game against Australia when he came on, and he's been superb throughout. Giroud, of course, has been old reliable. You know, it's so funny to see, like, it's been 25 minutes and Olivier Giroud has only had one touch. Or three touches.
Wait, man, just wait.
Yeah, wait, give him a ball in the box. Come on. But yeah, anyway, enough about that. We praise this guy way too much. Rabiot, of course, has continued his Zinedine Rabiot form. He carried that into the World Cup and he has been instrumental for France in midfield.
Especially in the first game, man. He really asserted himself, even got himself a goal.
He did, yeah. He looked incredible.
Next up, shall we discuss
Chesney. Chesney has saved two penalties, one of them on Messi, especially. Fucking incredible save. It's the same old confident Chesney shrugging off, you know, no problem, no problem, he said to the Argentina players as they were taunting him while Messi was stepping up to take the penalty, and he went on to save it. We've seen him trash talk players before and he often comes out on top, doesn't he, Chesney?
No, he's a monster. From the spot, he's a fucking monster. It doesn't matter what run of form he's going through, he's always magnificent from the spot.
That's true. And I don't know, psychologically, he has it down. He's a professional psychological player.
Like. And just looking at him, you wouldn't think the guy's a shithouse. You know what I mean?
Then you watch that video of back when he was
It
happened again. He's a shithouse, you know?
He loves it. He's brilliant.
He's got the mentality. Amrabat, bro, for me.
Running the show for Morocco. Honestly, in the middle.
They're through Morocco, we know that.
So are Poland, by the way.
Yeah, Amrabat kept up the momentum from the league. He broke down play brilliantly. He also influenced the transitional play fantastically.
It's like you're watching him at Fiorentina.
Literally, yes. He plays in the same way.
Same old Amrabat. Like.
I would say that he's one of the best in his position. If not, you know. In Italy. I don't think... In Italy, man, I don't think there's a player who's both as capable as breaking down play and, you know, keeping the play ticking as well as he is. Bennacer is fucking brilliant. He's probably technically Bennacer is better than Amrabat. But then Amrabat has a physicality that Bennacer makes up for with his aggression. You know, it's not quite the same. And when you're that big and that athletic at the same time, it's a massive asset for anything.
Yeah, I mean, physically he's more built for it. What I prefer about Ben Nasser is the manner in which he can get round players
and how he's not shy. How he shifts
exactly.
From left to right,
he's
so
faster
quickly
in the transition than Amrabat. With Ben Nasser, you concentrate a little bit more on the output.
Yeah.
And then Amrabat, you concentrate a bit more on breaking down play. Yeah. I like them both. It depends on what system the team plays in, though. That was a bark.
They probably didn't even hear it. Sabiri scored a free kick.
Sabiri scored a fantastic free kick.
Yeah, Sabiri was a bit of a fluke with the goalkeeper, to be honest.
He went near post. He caught him off guard. He fucked him up. That was brilliant by Sabiri, man.
We've seen that Sabiri can create things out of nothing. We've seen that he has moments of brilliance. He has an interesting ceiling, this guy. I imagine him playing with a good Serie A team in the future.
Yeah, man, he's definitely got something very, very special, man. Very special. The way he can hit a ball and his intelligence when it comes to that. He's brilliant. His ceiling is very high. Yeah. Very high.
And Morocco have been brilliant. Of course, their defensive record was very good. These guys proving to be instrumental for the side. Mehdi Benatia was not there. Interesting.
No,
no. Weird seeing Morocco without the Moroccan gunman himself. Leão, bro, was not starting due to the massive respect Portugal have for Ronaldo. He came off the bench, he switched up the gears, and he scored a few minutes in. He came to the second game, but was not as successful. There are rumors that Ronaldo won't be starting the next Portugal game. Apparently, he didn't even show up to training or something.
I saw something about him not being.
We'll see what's going on with him. Apparently, he got a massive offer from a team in Saudi Arabia.
Al Nassr.
Yeah, he's going to be making something like 175 million a year.
Bro, I saw 500 million in 2 years.
There have been many figures thrown around. The smaller the paper, typically the higher the figure.
Exactly.
That's the way these things go. But yes, so maybe that has something to do with it. But yes, if those rumors are true, Leão will indeed be starting for Portugal in their next game.
And I think, I mean, we know how Leão operates. You give Leão a full game, at some point he's gonna do one of the things that he does. Like,
he impresses. He gets you on the edge of your seat.
Exactly.
That's why he attracts so much attention overseas. Exactly. Reece James saying he's one of the toughest opponents he's
ever. Exactly. And it's crazy to see, because if you come on and you score right after on the first match, you'd think you'd be given more time in the second match. If that's what you can do in 5, let's see what you can do in 15. You know what I mean? But it certainly hasn't been the case, because his play time is still not what it should be. I think he should start, personally. Or at least come on in the fucking 60th if you're not going to start.
For sure. Of course, he should definitely start. Vanja Milinkovic-Savic, bro, is a caged giant. Serbia must keep him in chains in the dressing room, man, like, to stop him from just clubbing everyone. He truly is a fantastic and formidable sight, man.
He is, man.
6'8", fucking agile. You know, pulls off incredible saves.
He's been really good, man. He's been solid.
Commands the area, hoofs balls upfield and switches up play. He's been a top player. He's really improved from the last few seasons.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. One thing we're seeing is he's using his size to his advantage better. Yes. Like, it seems like, you know, when Donnarumma used to stand between the sticks during a penalty, he's kind of taken that, like, he's making himself big. He's really utilizing that height and to command his area. As well, he's a beast in the entire box. We saw him for Argentina. He stood in the middle of the box during one of the corners. Messi went for a goal, in fact.
And if you have never seen it, Google Vanja Milinkovic-Savic free kick. Okay, the guy has taken free kicks for Torino in the past. And there's one of them where he struck the post, almost fucking scoring. Thunderous free kick. It's crazy to see. He's such a cool player.
Yeah, and we've seen him take penalties and penalty shootouts as well. He's an entertaining one, man.
So those were the top performers, in my opinion. Honorable mentions, a few players have scored. Dia has scored for Cameroon. Granted, it was a gift to him. There was a defensive error. But I liked Dia. I think his movement has been good. And if Senegal actually play him the ball more, he would be more successful.
No, he's been good as well. It's not just obviously the output. He plays well with the team. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Sergej Milinković-Savić scored for Serbia, but has been deployed out wide as a left winger. That does not, in my opinion, suit him very well.
This Stojkovic, whatever the fuck his name is, the manager. I'm sorry, I'm sure he knows the team better than I do, but the lineup that he plays, for example, really doesn't utilize the players that he has to their full potential. Like, not starting Vlahovic is another one. And there are these fucking rumors going around that he's fucking the sub-goalkeeper's woman.
And apparently he's being punished by not starting.
It's crazy, man. Crazy. Yeah.
Mitrovic is starting ahead of him. Mitrovic has,
to be fair,
quite a few goals in the Premier League this season. So, yeah. But yeah, Vlahovic, do you believe the rumors? I put a poll recently. It was quite 50-50 for the majority of time.
I'm not sure, because these things obviously happen in football. It happens even out of football. He might have done it. I don't know. But that's not the reason as to why he's starting the game or not starting the game, I would say.
Look, I don't think he did it, but there's an expression, no, where there's smoke, there's fire. And there's a hell of a lot of smoke, baby. We've seen Lozano with Mexico. He was quite ferocious, wasn't he?
He asserted himself a lot. He was very active. I think he would have hoped that he had a slightly more successful campaign.
Mexico took a while to turn it up, to be honest. In the last game, they looked amazing against Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And in fact, the commentator was saying, like, where has this Mexico side been? And it's true. Mm-hmm. They played really well. They looked like they could do it.
Yeah, I mean, when you're in that bad position that you're in the last game, like, your best side comes out, you know what I mean? I think the best way to judge the team's capabilities is over the three matches. So I really don't think Mexico did enough. But obviously they were fired up in the last one and they wanted to get the result.
Bron has been reliable with Tunisia. They were unfortunate not to qualify after beating France's reserve team. Ampadu looked his usual hustling self with Wales. He always impresses me, Ampadu. Ricardo Rodriguez was his usual leader self at, of course, Switzerland. I was not impressed by Switzerland whatsoever this World Cup, bro. I thought they turned up to most games with a defensive approach, and that is unforgivable. You have to go for it in a World Cup game.
And I think when you look at the success smaller teams than Switzerland have had, I think Switzerland would be kicking themselves for taking that approach.
For sure, man. Karadžić was dependable for Australia. Brescia's man made it through to the round of 16. He's the 26-year-old fullback, of course. Bro, Australia.
That was like...
The Socceroos, baby!
The least one I was expecting, man. The least one I was expecting.
But they, once again, look like a unit, man.
They look good, man.
Defensively, they're sound.
They look as a good team. They have absolute, like really not many players, stand out.
A bunch
man.
Of A-League players and a bunch of Scottish Premier League players. Mm. Like Mui in the middle.
Exactly. They're a fun side to watch, man. I'm really impressed by the international teams because I always thought that, like, these guys don't train much together, so it's not on the same level as club football, because club football, they go through longer periods training with each other. But it's like they play together all the time, some of these teams. The smaller teams was like you'd rather be playing in the World Cup for Australia than playing in the A-League. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So they really, that's what they look forward to all the time.
I just think that it's such a high-stakes stage that, like, they try their very best and they're hyper-aware every second. There's no time to get distracted.
Yeah.
And you need to execute every move perfectly. You're punished if you fuck up. And I think that, you know, makes them play more safely and more focused. And it is true. They do perform well together, bro. Some of these teams have been quite intricate. However, many fans have been saying that this has been a low-quality World Cup.
Low-quality World Cup, maybe if we're talking about leaky defenses. Like, probably if you look at the fact that Costa Rica... Yeah, like the biggest teams are losing to the smallest teams. Maybe that's the point they're trying to make. Everyone's on a level playing field. No one really stands out. But
everyone stands a chance.
Exactly. I don't think it's low quality at all. I think even the likes of England, I was discussing with my colleagues today, I was telling them what a versatile team England have, man. They have so many direct replacements for everyone and they have weapons everywhere. Like,
imagine De Zerbi was England's coach.
Literally.
They would win every trophy, like.
Literally.
The Euros, the World Cup, all England. It'll come home.
Team, man.
It'll come home. If De Zerbi was the England manager, it'll come home.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the likes of Brazil, Argentina, France have looked really good together as well. Spain looked really good, but now they just fucking lost to Japan. So that's what we're talking about. You know what I mean?
Exactly. When it comes to terrible outings, bro, I have a few players over here. I think Milinkovic with Serbia has been terrible. He's been a liability at the back when it comes to the defensive line, man. He's often keeping people onside and then raising his hand. Like, you know, offside, like you're keeping him on, run back.
He plays in Italy, in Italy.
With Fiorentina, exactly. With Italianos Fiorentina. But he's looked a little bit lethargic and one step behind, quite frankly. Serbia in general have not looked very good, bro. I was expecting more from them. It's a bit of a shame.
I think even...
We'll see how they do in their last game.
It's interesting because when you look at the 2018 World Cup, they also had a fantastic team on paper, a really, really good team. Remember a colleague of mine, I used to work at a restaurant, and a colleague, Serbian, his name was Vukasin, And he was telling me, bro, we have one of the best teams there. And I'm like, I know, I believe you. But they were terrible and they got knocked out in the groups. And then after that, in the qualifiers for the 2022 World Cup, they topped Portugal in the group. They were the best team there. And then they turn up to the actress. It's almost like they're scared of the big stage,
it's
man.
It's true. I mean, there's a lot of pressure. When you have a whole nation watching you, the newspapers go berserk with expectations. Mm-hmm. It's not easy otherwise.
And I think it might have a few hotheads in it. Not hotheads, maybe some egos,
yes,
I would say. Because again, these are star players, man, every single one of them. But all of them want to be the big player of Serbia. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point.
Thank you.
Onana played one game and got sent home. He had a tactical, disagreement with the manager. He insisted on being deployed as a ball player, i.e. a sweeper keeper. Aliou Cissé disagreed with him, of course, and sent him home. Apparently, you know, Onana was really adamant.
Yeah, I don't think it was just like, hey, I want to be a sweeper keeper. Fuck off, go home.
Get the fuck out.
I really don't think that was the case. I think Onana was rebelling and like, I won't play if you're not going to deploy me as a sweeper keeper. I'm a sweeper keeper. I want to be a sweeper keeper.
Have you ever heard of Simone Inzaghi?
After we did the game, go swap someone else, go keeper. I'm tired of keeper. I want to play. I mean,
I'm striker.
You're in the World Cup. Your manager is telling you, listen, focus on the box. Focus on the box.
He's the boss.
Exactly.
You have to do what the boss says, man.
Exactly.
You don't have a boss.
The boss was in your situation. He played in the World Cup with Senegal. Yeah,
exactly. Lautaro, bro, he was harshly done by offside calls during the first game for Argentina, but still has failed to score. I was expecting him to have kind of a breakout at this World Cup.
Yeah, I thought he'd be. When you look at the talent around him, feeding him, and him being such a great finisher, yeah, I was expecting more from him. Does this go to the conversation we have all the time about him? Maybe he's only really good in a two up front. Or maybe he's simply not used to being the sole man up front. With Inter, he's always been deployed
as
with
a striker
near striker him. Exactly.
Yeah. It's true. That's fair enough. He, alongside a target man, a big guy up front, he performs very well.
Exactly, which is why we saw him do so well with Lukaku a couple of seasons ago.
As you mentioned, Vlahovic shagged the goalkeeper's wife and has barely featured for that reason. The most recent one for us was Lukaku's disaster class Belgium. Their most recent game, in their last game of the World Cup. Bro, what did you make of that Lukaku performance?
It's one of the worst striking performances I've ever seen. Because you have four chances that are all deemed bad misses. I guess the one where the ball was canted into his shin. Yeah. I guess you can say he didn't have time to react and he's a big stocky striker, so he wouldn't expect him to score that.
Yeah.
But the other three, oh my God, the header, absolutely open goal, just to put it in. He had one, it was a long ball, a long cross whipped in perfectly past the goalkeeper, past all the defenders. Yeah. He's there and he chests it into the goalkeeper. Yeah. Instead of being agile and mobile enough to volley it in, he saw it coming from a mile away, like, man.
Yeah, it was a horrendous display. But to be fair to Lukaku, this was his first game back properly in like 7 months. You know, he's rusty, he's shaking off the rust. He was featuring for Chelsea, he came back for Inter, he scored, he got injured again. He's far from fully fit, of course. And I think mentally, he's not close to being optimal at all.
No, but exactly. You could see all that, man.
Yeah,
you could see all of it in him.
And Belgium's golden generation had a lot of pressure to perform. This was their last dance. There was De Bruyne who publicly came out and said, like, we're getting old, man. We're tired.
I mean,
like, are you kidding me? Croatia are old and tired as well, but they're still fucking killing it.
A stupid comment to make, but Belgium don't play well now for the same reason that they didn't play well back when they were all physically in their prime.
Yeah.
Except they're a bit worse now because, yes, they're a little bit older. Right, I see that.
Yes.
I see that. The fact that they still rely on Vertonghen and Alderweireld at the back is what? Eden and Thorgan still in your team after what Eden has been through recently. Sure, you bring him to the World Cup, but maybe don't start him.
Yeah,
I don't start strikers everywhere. They're playing Mertens, Carrasco, Lukaku, Thorgan Hazard, Eden Hazard, all these players, so attacking minded. Relax.
That's true.
Relax.
And yes, the person in charge has plenty of time to relax, as Martinez has been sacked by Belgium. So
No, he wasn't. He wasn't sacked. He decided before the World Cup that he was going to leave.
He's been sacked
at the end of.
Say a spotlight. You heard it here.
He decided before the World Cup, I'm gonna leave Belgium after this.
Yes, okay. Last good. I mean, he wasn't too standard, in my opinion. He wasted an entire generation of footballing talent. I'm sorry. It's true. What the fuck? Get sacked.
Yeah, bro. I mean, now you look at Belgium's team, and it's true. None of them are in their prime. Yeah. Witzel is still there. Courtois in his prime. Yes, Courtois is the best
guy
he's ever been. Yeah. Madonna. And De Bruyne.
It's still De Bruyne. Nothing.
Yeah, but I didn't see anything from him.
Oh, I mean, he played all those balls to Lukaku, bro.
Fair enough.
Yeah. CDK as well had a bit of a mare, but of course that was expected. You know, there's a lot of pressure on the kid right now. I liked Serginho Dest, bro, with the USA. Mm. He was instrumental going forward and their offensive play. But he's a key part of it. And come on, USA, they're great. Like, you made it, man. You made it through.
No, I'm glad. I'm happy for the US of A, and I'm happy for Dest as well. He does see more himself with them. Obviously, the guy is still adapting to not your normal league, man, a very tactical league where you have to be very, very disciplined with every step that you make. And he has some more freedom with the US, and he's good on the ball, man. He's good at attacking. He's strong, man. He can get back quick as well. Yeah. He looks good, solid.
He looks very good. And the USA look very good too. They have players who all play in Europe. Mm-hmm. They're a great team, man. They have players from Villarreal, they have players from Chelsea, Milan, they have Juventus, they have players from everywhere, Arsenal.
Yeah.
It's just funny to see, bro, that whenever England play, all right? Like England played the USA, they played this talented USA team. England are so overrated that the odds are always mental.
Mm.
I played a USA or draw in a group stage match. And the odds were 2.5. USA or draw. I put 30 euro on it, I won.
I would not have placed that, man. I'm not going to lie.
What are you talking about, bro? England are really good at like lurking outside the area. And then no one plays it to Kane.
I guess what you
Kane
mean.
Leaves the box and then creates something because Kane is a fantastic player. Like he's a great playmaker as well. He creates everything for them. And to be honest, I do think that they're a bunch of 100 million euro men who I personally wouldn't pay 100 million euro for.
Maybe I wouldn't pay 100 million euro for most of their players, bro. But the fact of the matter, in my opinion, they have such a talented group of players. And so many of them, the fact that you have to choose between players like Foden, Grealish, Rashford, Sancho. Two of them or one of them starts and the others are benched.
But they're all having a tough time domestically.
But then like Rashford comes in and he does that, for example. We know Grealish is capable of coming in and doing something. Kane is capable of doing something. And then you look at the midfield, like Calvin Phillips on the bench, for example. They're a very, very talented group of players. I love their goalkeeper. Yeah. Pickford is
a shithouse.
Nice. And he's
Chesney from Wish.
I think they're a very talented bunch. I think it says a lot about USA that they managed to hold them.
Of course. I mean, they're a talented bunch. The USA are also a talented bunch.
Yes. I think, as in world separate them. I think England will progress, obviously, way further than the US. I got a quest. Hadn't heard that one in a while.
We are back with the question segment for this episode. We kind of miss the question segment.
I miss it too.
But, you know, the episodes are long enough the way they are. Like, I don't want to make them too long.
Yeah, I do miss it though, man.
We should do it every now and then. Uh-huh. Why not? Uh-huh. Yes, let's
engaging.
Start doing that. Yes, it's nice. More engaging. So thank you very much, those who have sent in your questions. We're going to be going through them. To drop us a question for future episodes, you can follow us on Seya Spotlight on Instagram or Twitter. And follow our TikTok as well. Our TikTok is pretty
lit.
Good.
Yes, pretty nifty.
Our first hot take comes from Luca at ACM Legend 22 on Twitter. Rovella would start for this current Juve side had they not loaned him out.
Oof. I mean, interesting because without injuries,
yeah,
it's pretty stacked over there.
Yes, but with injuries, he would have started a few
With injuries, he'd be consistent right now. He'd be consistently in the team.
Yeah, and he's very, very good. He could do them a fucking service.
I think we, even when we're speaking about our tops and flops, we rated him pretty highly, yeah, man. He's been having a great season, really good at making this team. Everyone's a newbie. He's a newbie himself, and he's making the entire team gel himself from midfield.
He's doing great. He's developing very nicely too. He also asks, Simone Bastoni is the best Bastoni in the league. He didn't ask it, he said it actually. Simone Bastoni is the best Bastoni in the league. What do you think? You know what, bro? Yes, I think if you had to look at who influences his side more, who is more pivotal to his team, Simone Bastoni is more pivotal to Spezia than Alessandro Bastoni is to Inter. Who is the better player on paper? Alessandro Bastoni. Who has the higher ceiling? Alessandro Bastoni. But Simone Bastoni, of course, is very fun to watch.
Yeah, I think if you were to look at both of them, I think Alessandro devoted to that centre-back position. And as a centre-back, he's the better player.
Yes, yes, yes.
However, Simone is very instrumental. He's very versatile. Like you're saying, he's very fun to watch as well. Mm-hmm. On certain days, especially the season so far, I have every reason to believe that Simone Bastoni is the best Bastoni in the league. But I think overall, you just have to give it to Alessandro.
The versatility point is a good one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
InstaFlynn325 on Instagram. Flindgerman, our friend. has asked us who will win the Dest Derby. The Dest Derby being the Netherlands against the United States of America.
Ooh, that's such a good game, man. They're quite similar. I'm gonna say the US.
Yeah, same. I'm gonna say the US. I don't like the tactical setup of the Netherlands at all. I don't like what Louis van Gaal's been doing with them. They're very defensive. He doesn't make the most out of their offensive players. He's got Memphis Depay up there, you know, like he's barely utilizing him. They've got Dumfries, who's been forced to defend and hasn't looked that good, to be honest with
you. I haven't enjoyed watching them, just like I haven't enjoyed watching Switzerland, Poland, and all these other teams. Yeah. The US, on the other hand, is a team that I've been enjoying watching quite a bit, and I think they might have what it takes, man. If they go out and play that fucking fun-to-watch football that they do, and the Dutch are just very conservative and not exciting and not explosive going forward, yeah, I think the US might actually get something done here.
Yeah, the Netherlands probably appear to be more street smart, so we'll see if the USA will be naive since they don't have much experience on the stage. I have been impressed by the Netherlands' Cody Gakpo, though. He has looked very, very good.
Yeah, I think he's definitely the only player this World Cup so far to score in every single fixture, three fixtures of the group stage.
Has he scored in all three? I thought he scored in two.
Three.
Holy shit. That's crazy. Our boy Pablo.dns asks, who are your favorites that you hope will go far in the World Cup? Ooh. I have been saying this since day one. For me, it's Argentina. When Argentina lost to Saudi Arabia, I said Argentina. For me, Argentina win this World Cup. I like them as a unit. I like them as a collective. I think they all want to give it to Messi, literally, not in the sexual way. I think that they have the fans behind them. I think it's such a special team, this current Argentina team. And I think they'll go all the way.
I agree. I think Argentina will go all the way still. I'm remaining loyal to my original opinion.
And now the path is looking decent for them, huh?
It is. It's looking okay. However, that being said, I'm really enjoying Morocco. And when it comes to a more fun rather than prediction, I'm really, really rooting for Morocco.
Yeah, I would like an underdog, I have to be honest as well. Morocco, I'd like Serbia would be a nice one. Serbia imagine.
No, as in like I'm rooting overall for Serbia, but the story of Morocco is brilliant.
Yeah, same. I would have to say I would like one of these smaller nations to win it this time, but I do think Argentina will win. Our boy Cesco_11 on Instagram, the Roma fan, he asks, have you guys ever kissed and made eye contact for 20 seconds plus after a Milan goal? Bro, we do it even if Milan don't score.
Exactly. We do it at kickoff. at the first water break, half time, second water break, then the final whistle.
Exactly. To be honest, we don't even look at the screen.
It's like when you go to the cinema with a girl when you're 17, like.
Yeah. And you can't open your eyes while you're doing that.
No. You have to feel it in the moment.
Exactly.
Although sometimes I do open my eyes to look at you.
So, Michael, I never caught you.
It's going on for way too long.
Fuck you, Jesco. I loud the fuck.
What the fuck is that question, bro? Hey,
come on, man. Ask us about the Roma and how wank they are. Or why Tammy Abraham or Belotti aren't fucking scoring.
Brilliant question. I enjoyed it.
Thank you, bro. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Say A Spotlight. Guys, once again, you can follow us on our socials at Say A Spotlight. Do reach out. Please remember to bother Matthew if he does not release an episode. Hashtag please Matt make a trend.
I'll do it. I promise. I'll definitely come up with one. Hopefully two. Yep, guys, remember to rate us 5 stars as well, wherever you're listening. You guys are the best for continuing to follow us. We saw our Spotify wrap today and we were overwhelmed by the amount of listeners that we're gathering. And the support that we're getting overall is amazing, man.
45 people on Spotify have us as their number one most listened to podcast. Please, if that's you, reach out. We'd like to know who you are.
Exactly.
We already know who some of you are, but please do reach out.
Yeah.
125 or some shit like that people have us in their top 10, man. That was actually crazy to see. Like, thank you very much, guys.
It's quite overwhelming considering as well that we started just a year and a half ago.
170 have us in their top 10.
Jesus, 127 in top five.
Yeah.
Wow.
40 countries. People listen from 40 countries. So shout out to the USA, shout out to Australia, shout out to Eastern Europe, shout out to all of you guys.
All of you.
And the UK. Everybody.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. We'll see you. Well, I will see you next week. Let's bid Jake a safe journey to Africa. Have a safe journey, Jake. And leave it up to me, guys. Thank you for listening. I'll see you next week. For Africa.